Ron Dobin, alcoholic. Thanks, Linda. she held up the 5-minute sign. Linda had a speaker meter a few years ago, and she invited me out to speak in Dixon at this meeting, and the meeting started at some weird time that meetings are not supposed to start at that time. And the way this meeting worked is in the beginning of the meeting, they had people come up and just speak at the podium and then the speaker. And so I get up to speak, and I totally lost track of time. I mean, that's never happened to me before or since. But I don't mean where I went like 5 minutes over or 10 minutes over. I mean like a half hour afterwards, she's going like this. And she got up and she went to the other side of the room. And so tonight I walk in, she's just 8:15, I'm holding up with this time. Oh, man. Happy birthday to birthday people. Happy birthday to Doug and Matt. And I go to a Friday night meeting with Matt, a MetStag meeting. And we've been telling him for a year at that meeting, no relationships for the first year of his sobriety. And I turned around when Joe was talking about that women that love too much thing. Man, did he get excited about that. I got to do this, and then I'm going to stop my talk. I just think this is the neat. How did you make this thing go up? Like that? Wow, is that cool or what? That is really neat. Okay, now I'm settled in, and we'll start. you know, I was talking with Dave today, and we were talking about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I believe the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of action, and that may turn you off if you're new, but I truly believe it's a program of action, and I didn't know that when I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is September 21st, 1976. I'm sober 27 years and about 4 months. And when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I came here because I couldn't stop drinking. I had done everything I could possibly think of in my life to stop drinking. I knew I was in trouble with booze. I knew it. I went to my first meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the things I heard early, like first week of sobriety, was that alcoholism was a disease. And if I was an alcoholic, what I had was a two-part illness. I had a physical allergy to alcohol that was coupled with a mental obsession that this time it would be different. This time I could drink and get away with it. And they said if I was an alcoholic, there were only three things that could ever happen to me. And I listened. You know, I was in trouble, so I listened to what they had to say. And they said the three things that could happen to me is, one, I would die from the disease of alcoholism or a related disorder, like a car accident or something like that. Number two would be that I would go to jail or be in a mental institution for the rest of my life. And number three is that I would get sober. And when they said that, I kind of mouthed the words. It was a two-word sentence. The first one was bull, and you can imagine what the second one was. And people saw that, because I thought they were trying to scare the newcomers. I really did. I figured that's what, you know, give me a break, a fatal illness. Yeah, right. So they came up to me after the meeting, and the man says, "You don't believe that, do you?" And I said, "No." I said, "You're trying to scare us." And I said, "This thing's not fatal." And he said, "Ron, it's progressive." He said, "Alcoholism gets worse and worse and worse and worse until eventually you'll die from it." And he said, "Look back in your life. Is your life worse now than it was a year or two or three ago?" And I had to answer yes. I had to answer yes. I got in a lot of trouble as a teenager. I grew up in the 60s, and I got thrown out of my house when I was 17 years old. I lived on the streets for a couple of years, and then I kind of cleaned up my act and got things back together, and I went to work for a company when I was 21 years old. And when I went to work for this company, they found that I had a lot of talent in this business. And within 6 months of going to work there, they promoted me. I may be a junior manager. And this company was located in New York City. It offices all over the country, but the one I worked in was in New York City. And they promoted me to a management position. And within 6 months of that, I was doing halfway decently, and they decided they wanted to open a branch office on Long Island, and they made me branch manager. And I'm like 22 years old or so at the time. And that did well. And within another year or so, they made me area manager of that company for the Eastern Seaboard. And when I was 25 years old, they named me national sales manager of that firm. And my wife, Ann, and I, they transferred us from New York out to Los Angeles. So we moved to the Los Angeles area of California. I've got hundreds and hundreds of people that are working for me. We've got offices all over the country. I'm making more money than my father ever dreamed of making. And I grew up not in a poor home, a middle-class home. And I thought, man, I've arrived. I've really done something with my life. Now, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous 3 years later. I was 28 years old when I came to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard that it was a progressive illness, and the man said, look back on your life. Is it worse now than it was a year or two or three ago? When I got to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was unemployed, and I was unemployable. I had hair down to here, I had a long beard, and I didn't bathe every day. So when the man said, is your life worse now than it was a couple of years ago, I had to answer yes. I had to answer yes. I knew I was an alcoholic for years before I ever came to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Ann and I were invited to a party one night, and somebody got a hold of the 20-question test. And this is probably 2 or 3 years before I ever showed up at Alcoholics Anonymous. And everybody's partying and having a good time. This guy pulls out this yellow card from John Hopkins, and it's got 20 questions about your drinking. And you answer these questions yes or no. And it says things like, have you ever had a blackout due to drinking? Have you lost ambition due to drinking? And these 20 questions. And on the bottom of this test, I take these 20 questions, right? And on the bottom of this questionnaire, it says, if you answered yes to any one of these questions, there's a possibility you could be an alcoholic. And if you answered yes to 2 of these questions, there's a better chance you're an alcoholic. If you answered yes to 3 of these questions, you're definitely an alcoholic. And this is, as I said, probably 3 years before I ever came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I took that test, and I got 17 yeses. And that's what I did. I laughed, man. I thought that was the funniest thing I ever saw. People would watch me drink because I just believe you drink one, you get it down, you drink the, you get drunk. I mean, that's the reason for it. You know, I was sober for probably a year or two, and one night I go to a meeting, and I got sober in Pasadena, and our meetings used to start at 8:30, and I leave the house about 8 o'clock, and Ann's doing some housework, and she poured herself some booze over some ice, right? And I go to the meeting, it's 8 o'clock, and the meeting's from 8:30 to 10 o'clock, I stand around, I'm talking to my friends, and I get home about 10:30 at night, and she's still working on that drink. Now, that is sick drinking, as far as I'm concerned. I just think, man, you get them down. That is the reason that we do this, you know? And people would look at me and they go, Ron, you drink funny. And I go, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. Here's to you. You know, I didn't care. I didn't know what it meant to be an alcoholic. I also knew that someday, somehow, some way, I was going to put the pieces to the puzzle together and be able to drink the way she did, the way my parents did, or I was going to be able to give it up and just not drink anymore and just be okay. It was just, I had these other issues, and a couple of drinks just made everything so much better. And I wanted to stop drinking. The last 2 years of my drinking, I became a daily drinker, a daily drunk, and a person that tried to give up drinking on a daily basis. And I don't ever want to forget that. I don't ever want to forget that. I would come off of drunks day after day after day after day, because I was a person that drank every day. And I had the disease of alcoholism. So what happened to me is I'd sit down and have a drink or two just to take the edge off, and all of a sudden it's the next day. And I don't know what happened the night before. All I know is I come to, and if I'm at home, if I'm in bed, the bed is soaked with sweat. And I know I'm awake because I've got this headache, and it feels like pins just shooting off in the middle of my brain. And that's how I know I'm awake in the morning. And I just lay there in bed with this horrible, horrible headache, my eyes closed. And then after a few minutes, I'd get this feeling in my stomach, and it was pressure. And I knew that that was the booze waiting to get out. And I lay in bed with this headache and this feeling in my stomach until I say to myself, you better get into the bathroom now. and I get into the bathroom and I'm sick. And then I would stand up next to the vanity mirror and I'd look in my own eyes and I'd tell myself, I'm never going to do this again. I'll never be this sick. I'll never be this hungover. I'll never do this again. And I mean it with every fiber of my being. I'll never drink again. Everything I have, I mean that with. And that's at whatever time it was that I would come to, 6 in the morning, 8 in the morning, 10 in the morning, made no difference. I would go through that. And somewhere that afternoon, I'd be thinking to myself, you know, Ron, it really wasn't all that bad last night. And I do the same thing over the next day. And that afternoon, I got that same feeling in my gut that, man, there's something wrong. It's like a spring just being held down. It's just this feeling like, man, there's just something wrong. And let me just have a drink or two, and the world gets better. And I think to myself, you know what the real problem was last night? The real problem was you took the third drink. Because when you took the first one, you felt so much better. And then you took the second one, and man, it worked. And you took the third one, and that's when you lost your memory last night. So tonight, stop with two, then you'll be fine. Next morning, I'm coming out of another blackout. I'm in that same bathroom. I'm looking at that same vanity mirror. I say to myself, okay, you screwed up yesterday, but I'll never do it again now. And again, I mean it with everything I have. And that afternoon, it's some other excuse. You know, this time I can drink and get away with it. And I'm not able to get away with it. You know, I'm not able to get away with it. And day after day, I can tell you this. In a two-year period, there are 730 days. 730 days in 2 years. What I just described to you happened to me somewhere between 600 and 700 of those days where I said, I'll never drink again, meant it with everything I had. Everything I had, I'll never drink again. And I'm drunk that day, and I can't understand why. And finally, September 21st, 1976, I go on a drunk. Now, the funny thing is, I went on a drunk every day for that whole year, probably. But I certainly had a drunk on September 1st and 2nd and 3rd and 4th and 5th and every day up until September 21st. And every one of those drunks, I would come off the next morning and say, I'll never do it again. And I went on a drunk on September 21st. I came off that drunk the next morning. And the only difference between that drunk and all the thousands of times I'd been drunk before that is when I came off that last drunk, I said to me, I can't stop. That's the only difference. That's the only difference. I knew when I came off that last drunk, I didn't want to drink. But I didn't want to drink the day before. You see, and the day before, I said to me, I'll never do it again. Meet it with every fiber of my being, and I'm drunk that night. And when I came off that last drunk, I said, I can't stop. I can't stop. No matter how much I don't want to drink today, I'm going to get drunk today. And that scared me. That scared me. And I thought back to a telephone conversation I had with my mother probably 5 years earlier than this. I called her on a Saturday, and I was just saying, you know, what are you doing tonight, Mom, and all that. And she said to me, she said, you know my friend Venka? And I said, sure. And she said, well, Venka's in something called Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, I don't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, but Venka hasn't taken a drink in a year, like Matt. She said, Venka hasn't taken a drink in a year. And we're going to this thing tonight. It's called an AA birthday party to celebrate Venka's year of sobriety. And my mother still kids me about this. I mean, this is like 30 years ago now that this happened, but she still kids me about this, because it was about 10 o'clock in the morning. She heard me do it. I walked over to the refrigerator. I popped a beer open. I said, Mom, here's to Venka. You know, what do I care if this lady's sober a year? But when I came off that last drunk, I thought Venka went to Alcoholics Anonymous and stayed sober a year. And maybe if I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, I can stay sober a couple of days or maybe even a couple of weeks. And that's what I came here looking for. I never expected to stay here 27 years. I never thought I could stay sober 27 days, much less 27 years. So Alcoholics Anonymous has worked in my life. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has worked in my life. I got 35 minutes before Linda starts doing this. So the next 35 minutes, I'm going to take you through my journey of sobriety. Because I had to find out that there were a lot of ways that I needed to heal up in this program. When I first got here, I thought the disease of alcoholism was a drinking problem. I've been here long enough to find out it's not. It's not. I didn't know that when I got here. But I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and the first thing I was told to do, and like I said, Dave and I were talking about action, the first thing I was told to do was go to a lot of meetings. And I'm like in the first week of sobriety, and I'm going to talk about a couple of things that happened to me in the first week of sobriety that kind of got me into action. One of the first things was they told me to go to a lot of meetings. Man said to me, he said, how often did you drink, son? I said, I drank every day. He said, you an alcoholic? I said, yeah. He said, do you want to get sober? I said, yeah. He said, how often do you drink? I said, every day. He said, we got a formula for daily drinkers if you want to stay sober. I said, what's your formula? He said, the formula is you go to a meeting every single night, and you don't drink in between the meetings, and you're going to wind up staying sober the rest of your life. And I asked him, I said, well, how often did you drink? He said, I drank every day like you. I said, how long are you sober? He said, 18 years. I said, okay, I'll try that. Now, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I know this may surprise you, but I didn't trust people. And, you know, I've lived here now for, 17 years, I guess we've been here. And I haven't met it. In Pasadena, you're not going to believe this, it's going to shock you. But they actually have people in Pasadena that say one thing and do something else. I know that shocks the hell out of you up here, but, you know, that's what happens. So, you know, this guy says go to a meeting every night and you're not going to drink. But I don't trust him. So what I did is I showed up at meetings because I was scared, but I went up to people that had some time. And I asked these people, one after another after another. I'd say, your first few years of sobriety, how many meetings did you go to? And I'm going to tell you, not 100%, but probably 90 or 95% of the people that I spoke to told me they went to a lot of meetings. Four a week was about the minimum I heard. Six or seven was pretty much the average that I heard. And some I thought then were pretty fanatical. I think the same thing today. And that's they tell me they go to two and three and four a day. You know, but the average was just about every night. And then I would go up to people that couldn't stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. People that would come in and they'd say, oh, I was sober for a few months or a year or whatever it was. And then I went back out and I'd ask these people, I'd say, how many meetings do you go to? And again, not 100%. But probably 90% of them would say to me, oh, I go to a meeting a week, or I go to two meetings a week, or whenever I can fit them in. Now that I'm sober, my schedule is pretty busy. I'm trying to get my life back together. And, you know, I can add two and two. So I said, okay, I'm going to go to a lot of meetings, and I did. And I go to a lot of meetings to this day. I go to 3 to 5 meetings a week to this day, and I'll go to 3 to 5 meetings a week for the rest of my life. Now, one of the reasons, there's a couple of reasons. We were talking about this at the STAD meeting last night. One of the reasons I'll do that is, there's a couple of reasons. One is to treat my own alcoholism. Without a doubt, I need meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to sit with people that have good programs of Alcoholics Anonymous that will remind me, hey, you got alcoholism, not alcoholism. You got to work the steps today. I need you guys to tell me that. But the second reason that I go to a lot of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous is I've had 9 sponsors in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And every one of these men, except for two, was an old timer. When they passed away, I think the minimum any of them had was 30 years. My sponsor today is sober for 56 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that's a long time, you know, as long as I'm alive, you know. But every one of these men, they didn't even know each other, but every one of these men, I asked every one of them, I said, how can I give back to you? How can I give you what you've given me? You saved my life. How do I help you? And every one of them said the same thing. And they didn't know each other. I mean, some did, but they, you know, didn't know each other well. It wasn't like they all got together and said, hey, one day this nut Dobin's going to show up, and this is the answer when he asked that question. You know, what they all said to me, they said, you keep going to meetings. You be there for the new guy. They said, we were here for you. We didn't stop. You be there for the new person. And I hold that responsibility very dear. You know, one of the things it says in our big book is that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of the problem for an alcoholic. That's the root of my problem. There's nothing, I think, that's more selfish than to come to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous if you were in the shape I was in, where I was almost dead, and I come here, and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous not only gives me life, but it gives me a good life, where I'm comfortable inside myself, where I can look at my wife and have love and compassion for her. I have friends today in my life. I look in the mirror and I like what I see. And that became because I came to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think there's anything more selfish in the world, personally, than to come here and meet, I get mine, and then I split and say, okay, you figure out how to get yours. You know, and these guys told me I had to do that. Second thing that happened is it happened to me at 3 days of sobriety. The guy told me to get into service. And what happened is about I guess about a year or two before I sobered up in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was on a weekend drunk, and Ann made a phone call to Alcoholics Anonymous, and this guy by the name of Jim Tiernan answered the phone. And he was pretty new at that time, because when I sobered up, he was 3 years, so he was probably maybe a year sober. And she said, my husband's in trouble, and he said, I'll be right over. And he got on his white horse to make his 12-step call, and then he came, right? And he comes in, and I'm half drunk, and I'm thinking, what the hell is this guy doing here? And he starts telling me about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I looked at him. I said, Jim, if I ever get as bad as you, you'll see me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, but for now, why don't you get the hell out of here? And I threw him out, right? So now I get sober, and I'm at my second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's Saturday night. It's a Saturday night downtowners meeting in Pasadena. It still meets. It's a speaker meeting down there. It's a good meeting. You walk up this long row of stairs, right? And I get to the top of the stairs. I walk in, and there's Jim Tiernan. And he laughs, and didn't make me feel good. He just laughed right at me. And he said, man, I guess you're as bad as I am, man. And anyway, he sits me down, gets me a cup of coffee and all that. And the way this meeting worked, there were like long rows of tables. And because it was a Saturday night, a lot of people came with their wives or spouses. And he just started introducing me around to people. And he made me feel pretty good. And we get to the coffee break, and we're chatting a little bit. And we get to the end of the meeting, and he looks at me and he says, Ron, he said, you relegate sobriety to being on the wagon, don't you? And I said, yeah, it's the same thing. And he said, I don't know if you ever thought about this. He said, but if you're on something, you can fall off. And I thought, man, that makes sense, Jim. You know. And he said, have you ever thought of getting into Alcoholics Anonymous? It's harder to fall out of something. And I thought, that makes a lot of sense. I said, but what are you talking about? And he said, what I want you to do is go up to the secretary. He said, tell him I sent you. Tell him your name. Tell him you're sober for 3 days. And you want a job in this meeting. And I said, okay. So I went up to the guy after the meeting. His name was John. I said, John, Jim Tiernan just sent me over. I said, my name is Ron. I said, I'm sober for 3 days. I want a job in your meeting. And he said, great, we need somebody. He said, you're on the setup committee. He said, your job is ashtray putter outer. And this is in the days where you used to be able to smoke in meetings. And so I show up the next week, and they show me how to put the ashtrays out. And they had these nice glass ashtrays. They were really cool-looking ashtrays. It looked like crystal, you know, that phony-looking, or not phony, I mean, it was glass, but it looked like crystal. So my job is to put the ashtrays out, and at the end of the meeting, I wash them and stack them. And this is in the days we used to both smoke back then. So I'm stacking the ashtrays, and I'm thinking, they're better than the jelly jars we use, you know. So I took an ashtray, and I go home, right? So the next week, I'm driving to the meeting. And I start to think, which is really dangerous if you knew. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, they don't really need an ashtray putter outer. But all the alcoholics are just like me, and they're all stealing their nice glass ashtrays. And my job, because when I got here to AA, I was 6 feet tall. I weighed between 250 and 260 pounds. I got long red hair. I got this long beard. I'm red. I'm angry as can be. I mean, you know, I just glare all the time. And I thought, my real job in this meeting is to be ashtray monitor. And what I'm supposed to do is just sit like at a seat where I can watch everybody, and if somebody goes to steal an ashtray, my job is to get the ashtray back. And that's the real reason that the guy has me as ashtray monitor or ashtray putter outer. And I sit there for 3 months. 3 months. I show up every single Saturday night. I put the ashtrays out. I get this seat where I don't even see the speaker. I'm just like, you know, I'm watching everybody. Speaker says a joke. Everybody laughs. Not me. No way, man. I'm just looking. Go ahead. Take an ashtray. I dare you. You know? And I'm just waiting for somebody to take. I would have dove over a table after him. You know, but it was the start of my service work. Now, I found something out, and I'll pass this along if you're new here, if you have a home group, and it's a real benefit, in my opinion, of having a home group in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you have a feeling in your home group that the people are watching you, and you're paranoid about that, there's a reason for that. And the reason is that people are watching you. And they were watching me. And they noticed. Now, I'm there for 3 months. I haven't even said hello to anybody. My job is I get the ashtrays. I put them out. I make sure nobody steals one of the ashtrays. Then I clean them, stack them, count them, make sure we got the same amount of ashtrays, go home and show up the next week and do that. So after 3 months, John comes up to me, and he says, Ron, he says, you are really doing a good job. He said, we want to promote you. And I thought, man, they know when the class of AA has shown up, right? And I said, what do you want me to do, John? And he said, we want you to be greeter for our meeting. Now, that amazed me, because I haven't even said hello to somebody in 3 months, right? But they made me greeter of the meeting. So now my job is you walk up these stairs to this meeting, and you get to the top, and my job is to say, welcome to the Saturday Night Downtowners. So I do that. Do that the first week, do that the second week. And by the third week or so, people are coming upstairs, and as they get near the top of the stairs, they look at me and say, hi, Ron, how you doing? And some people said to me one night, they looked at me and they said, you know, a bunch of us go out to coffee after this meeting. And, you know, they said, we'd like you to come. And I said, okay. And I remember, you know, I went for coffee real quick, and then I went home and I told Ann, I said, I've got friends now. See, because we lived in this apartment house where it was a partying place. And this was an alcoholic's dream to live in this place. And the last year of my drinking, they didn't invite me to parties. And they partied every night, 7 nights a week. And they would call the apartment, and they'd say to her, they'd say, just wait till he passes out, and then we'll be by the pool. Because they knew if I was there, they were going to get into a philosophical discussion on something. Or they knew I was going to get into an argument about something. And I remember going home to her, and I said, I've got friends now. I've got friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was probably a week after that I heard a speaker in AA talk about dating his wife. And I thought, man, that's a pretty neat idea. I never thought about that. And I used to invite, we still have a date night, which is Saturday nights, unless I got to talk like now. But otherwise, we're together on Saturday nights. And in the first many years that I was sober, we used to go to meetings together on Saturday night. And it started with the Saturday Night Downtowners. When I was sober for a while, Dave and I were talking about this. On Thursday nights, I used to date my daughters. Thursday nights, I wouldn't take even a call from an AA person until 9 o'clock when they went to sleep. But it was my time with my kids. And I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that. But I've been in service in Alcoholics Anonymous from 3 weeks sober to today, because I learned that action was real, real important. One of the other things that happened to me early on, I got a sponsor by the name of Ernie Fox. And Ernie Fox was an amazing guy. I was sober for, I guess, about 3 months or so. And I wasn't working the first 3 months that I was sober. I was going to the racetrack every day, betting horses and stuff like that. But work was for suckers when I was sobered up. And Ernie used to always talk real good AA to me. Always, man. He was just the nicest guy. He was a little old man, you know, about 5'4" or so, and just gray hair. Just a nice guy, and kind of the grandfatherly type, you know that type. And anyway, he would talk real good AA. And I'm sober about 3 months, and I went up to him one day, and I said, Ernie, I said, I need another sponsor. I said, would you be my sponsor along with Jim? And he looked at me, and he said, I sure will, Ron. And he said, my last name is Fox. He said, why don't you look my phone number up in the telephone directory? I said, okay, I'll do that. And he said, what's your last name? He said, I'll look your phone number up in the telephone directory. And I said, well, my phone number is unlisted, Ernie, so let me give it to you. And Ernie turned in that instance from this little old man to Godzilla, just like that. And he starts hitting me in the chest with his hand. And he said to me, he says, if I'm going to be your sponsor, he said, you're going to list your phone and you're going to get a goddamn job. And you're also going to start paying your bills. And I remember he said that, and everything in me, because Ernie's 5'4", I'm 6 feet. Ernie's 130, 140 pounds, I'm 250 pounds. Everything in me, everything I have, just says, kill him. Kill him. Who does he think he's talking to like this? And I heard come out of my mouth, okay, Ernie, I'll go get a job. And I go get a job, right? And Ernie calls me up. And he says, you got a job? I said, yeah. He said, how, when do you get paid? I said, I'm paid every other week. He said, I'll be over. And I felt I got to pay him now to be my sponsor, right? And he shows up the first Friday. He says, where are all these bills you were talking about in the meeting? I said, they're right here. You know, there's the stack of them. He said, you're paid every other week. You're going to start paying your bills every other week. He said, if you're sober, he said, part of sobriety is responsibility. Part of sobriety is responsibility. I was talking, I guess, 2 weeks ago or so on a Saturday night somewhere. And when I got done talking afterwards, you know, people standing around, and one guy comes up to me and he said to me, he said, you know, would you work with me as a sponsor? I said, yeah, sure. I said, tell me what's going on in your life. And the guy starts explaining to me how he does home construction for, you know, he's like not a handyman, but he fixes houses. And he starts explaining to me that he was supposed to show up at work every morning at this couple's house to put in a kitchen or whatever at 8 o'clock in the morning. But he likes to sleep late, so he's showing up at like 2 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And when he gets there, he's pretty tired, so he decides he's only going to work for maybe a half hour or an hour, and then he goes home every day. And, you know, after doing this for a couple of weeks, his boss got a little pissed and decided to fire him. And I said, well, what are you doing now? He said, nothing. He said, I just lay around and watch TV all day long. And he said, I know having you as a sponsor is really going to help me. And I told him the Ernie Fox story, and I've never seen or heard of the man since. You know, so I started to learn that, you know, part of sobriety is responsibility. It's me meeting my own responsibilities. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Now, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got sober physically, and I healed up physically right from the get-go, just from not drinking. And I healed up materially because of Ernie Fox. He made me go to work. He told me I couldn't hang out in the Lano clubs and shoot pool all day long. He said, you've got responsibilities. Sobriety is responsibilities. You go to work, you pay your bills. And so I healed up materially. Emotionally, I didn't heal up in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for over 4 years, and I didn't understand why. I had gone through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was sober about a year, but I did them for me, what I believe it was enough to keep me sober, and I'm real glad I did what I did as far as that. Otherwise, you'd have a different speaker here tonight. But I didn't do them in what I believe today, in that the way I did the 12 steps is I went through the 12 steps like you would read a book or do a college course, in that I did the first step and I put a little check mark next to it. That's done. And at 3 months sobriety, I came to believe that there was a power greater than myself, so that one was done. And I got on my knees with a sponsor and I said the third step prayer, so that's done. And I wrote an inventory and that's done, and did a fifth step. And now the steps are done. And they were done with 9, 10 months sobriety, 11 months, somewhere in there. And then I thought what you do is you show up at meetings all the time. You keep doing your service work. If you're ever in trouble, emotional trouble, you call your sponsor or something like that. And that's the way I went for the first 4 years. And at 4 years sobriety, emotionally, now I'm not talking about physically or materially or any of that, but emotionally, the best description I can give of me is that I was the same man sober I was drunk. And I didn't understand why. I did not understand why. I'd come into meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I always went to a lot of meetings. And I'm a salesperson by trade, so I learned how to talk the talk. And I could copy what people said. And I learned how to talk the talk in Alcoholics Anonymous. But the meeting would end, and I'd walk out of the door, and I'd walk back to the same world I left, where I'm angry at people all the time. I can't get along with you. I can't walk in my own house and not be in a fight about something. Something's wrong somewhere. And we're fighting like cats and dogs all the time. I'm not getting along with the people I work with. One day they're my friends, the next day I want them all fired for some reason. I'm not getting along with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's not easy to do. Because what would happen to me is I'd come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I'd get called on in a meeting and I'd say something. And if I perceived that somebody that spoke after me disagreed with what I said, I hated them. I really did. And then I'd hear things in meetings like, since I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've learned to love everybody. And I think, man, there's about three that I'm still talking to, you know. And I'm sitting in meetings thinking, man, I hope that guy just has a real painful heart attack and just dies slowly, you know. And it's just because I said something in a meeting and he said something that I thought, man, he's not agreeing with what I'm saying. And so I'm in trouble in AA, I'm in trouble at work, I'm in real trouble at home. I'm in real trouble at home. I can't get along at all at home. I heard something growing up, and I think a lot of people hear this, and I'll tell you what, if you're an alcoholic of my type, it's probably the worst advice you can ever get, but I heard it growing up. My parents said to me, they said, Ron, when you get into a relationship with somebody, you're going to have to learn to give, and a relationship is 50-50. Just out of curiosity, anybody else ever hear that? Yeah, sure. Okay. The problem with that information, if you've got a mind like mine, is when I was drinking, I didn't do my 50%. I really didn't. You know, we've had a car repossessed. We went downstairs one morning, and the man's little yellow common gear is missing. I thought it was stolen, and we called the Pasadena Police Department, and I'm screaming at them while I ate donuts last night. Somebody ripped off my wife's little yellow common gear, and they came back on the phone and said, Mr. Dobin, your car was repossessed for non-payment. We've had our refrigerator repossessed, and she was really pissed about that when that happened. So I wasn't doing my 50%, you know. But once I got sober, I was doing my 50%. I went back to work because of Ernie Fox and started to do well again and bought our cars and houses and all kinds of stuff. And I'm thinking, man, I'm doing my 50%. The problem with that information, if you're an alcoholic of my type, and maybe this isn't for everybody, but generally there's at least one or two that can relate to it, is I walk in the house and I want to make sure you're doing your 50%. And I'm either saying something or thinking something, and either way I'm in trouble. Either way I'm in trouble. And I can't walk in that house and be there for 5 minutes without being in a fight about something. Something's wrong, and I got to straighten it out and let her know just how wrong she is this time, because I'm out there working, and, you know, why isn't dinner on the table, or something else is wrong. And man, that area of my life gave me troubles at that time. So I've got a lot of problems going on in my life. I'm not sleeping half the time at night. And finally, what happened to me is I'm sober a little over 4 years, and I hit a bottom in sobriety that was 100 times worse than the one I hit drinking. And I'm not a high-bottom alcoholic. But I had two friends on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. One was sober for 5 years. I was sober for a little over four at this time. And the other was sober for 4 years. And they were guys that I had been to coffee with, been to a lot of meetings with, et cetera. And the guy with 5 years got in his car one day, and he drove out to San Diego, and he got on an embankment, and he dove off right in front of a bus. And the guy with 4 years ate a gun. And I understood loud and clear why they did it. You say, I understood loud and clear why they did it. Because when 4 years earlier, when I hit a bottom due to drinking, and I thought to myself, I can't stop. I can't stop. And I thought, Venko went to Alcoholics Anonymous and stayed sober a year. And maybe if I come here, I can just have a few days or a few weeks of sobriety. And I had some hope. Maybe if I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, I can stay sober for a couple of weeks. But now I'm sober for 4 years. I'm sober for 4 years. I'm in meetings almost every night of the week. I'm sponsoring two guys. I'm part of the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been through your steps. And I can't shut down. I don't sleep at night half the time. I can't tell you what's really going on in my life, because what I think you're supposed to do is when you get to the doors of AA, you put your little happy smile on and come in here and tell you how great everything is. You just don't drink. One day you'll have what I have. And I got to a point in my life where I sat at the edge of my bed with a loaded gun and just thought, man, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. And obviously I didn't do anything. And the next day I hit a bottom through some things that happened in our home. And I went to another meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that night, and I ran into another sponsor. I ran into a man by the name of Bob Anderson. And Bob got sober in the San Fernando Valley, which is where we were living at that time. And he spent his first 20 years down there in the San Fernando Valley. And when he was sober 20 years, he moved to Denver. And on his 27th birthday, or right around his 27th birthday, he had moved back to San Fernando Valley. And this was his first meeting back. And it was a discussion meeting, and he got called on. And the first thing he spoke about was being the same man sober that he was drunk. And my ears perked up because I hadn't heard that before. What I heard is you put the plug in the jug and it gets better. Just don't quit before the miracle happens. You know, you have a bad day, but then you have all these good days. My problem is I was having all these bad days and then a good day once in a while. And he said, man, I'm the same man sober I am drunk. He said, my brain can get me in more trouble. I can destroy relationships. He said I can get in a lot of trouble cold sober. He said, but I found a recovery program in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, I found a way to live in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous where I'm comfortable in my own skin. And he said, my comfort comes through a God that I met in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then he said these words. He said, through this God, he was able to treat his family okay. And he said, he was able to go to work okay. He liked the people he worked with. He said, when I look in the mirror, I like what I say. And I went up to this man after that meeting, and I said, I'm sober 4 years. I said, I don't know if I'm coming or going. I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't shut off. I'm in real trouble. Can you help me? And he invited me to his place of business the next day. He said, Ron, I just opened a business on Sepulveda Boulevard. We should open at 9 o'clock. Get there tomorrow at 8:30, quarter to 9. We'll have a cup of coffee before I open up. I said, okay. I showed up the next day. I stayed with him from 8:30 till about 5:30. Long cup of coffee. He said to me, he said, tell me about your drinking. I did. He said, last night you said you didn't know if you were coming or going. What's going on in your life? I told him about the marriage problems. I told him about the job problems. I told him how I wasn't sleeping. He said, do you know what's wrong with you? I said, no, no. And I thought he was going to say to me I was psychotic or manic depressive or something. He said, you're suffering from untreated alcoholism. And I looked at him and I said, Bob, you're nuts. You missed this. And I said, I'm sober for 4 years. And he said, Ron, alcoholism has nothing to do with drinking except drinking treats it. And I said, where do you get that information, Bob? He said, out of the big book. And, you know, it's an old and true saying in AA. Old and true saying, if you want to hide something from an alcoholic, put it in the big book, because we don't read it. And but I asked him to show me. I said, show me where. And he did. He opened to page 24. And on page 24, it says this. It says, I have no choice and no defense against taking the first drink. Against taking the first drink. I always thought once I took the first drink, I had no choice. This says I have no choice against taking the first drink. And I said, well, why did they say that, Bob? And he opened to the doctor's opinion. And Dr. Silkworth writes that an alcoholic like me drinks for the effect of alcohol. But I am restless, irritable, and discontented unless I can again experience a sense of ease and comfort that come at once by taking a few drinks. And he said, just over 4 years, are you restless, irritable, and discontented? And I said, I sure am. The day before, I'm on the edge of my bed with a loaded gun. That's restless, irritable, and discontented. He opened to page 52 where it says, I have problems with personal relationships. I have fears. And I looked at him, and I said, wait a minute, Bob. I said, that's drinking behavior. That's not sober behavior. And he turned from this nice guy to Godzilla. And we got something straight in our relationship right away. Because he said, he screamed. I mean, he just screamed at me. He said, Ron, he said, if I'm going to be your sponsor, he said, you don't ever lie to me again. And I don't ever lie to you. That's our relationship. And I said to him, I didn't lie to you, Bob. What are you talking about? And I said, he said, I asked you to tell me about your drinking. Did I not? And I said, yeah, I told you about my drinking. And you said to me you were a blackout drinker, that most of the time you drank and then you came to and it was the next day. Is that correct or incorrect? I said, that's correct. He said, then what problems with personal relationships did you ever have drunk? He said, you weren't there. But how do you know now that you're sober? How do you do when somebody doesn't do something you want? Is it like water rolling off a duck's back? If your boss calls you in the office, he said to me, and he says, hey, Ron, I want to give you some constructive criticism about something. Is it like, hey, thanks, boss, I really appreciate it, or you want to tear his head off? And I thought, man, this guy knows what he's talking about. And then he said to me, he said, Ron, he said, we've been talking about you. He said, now I'm going to talk about me. But if the shoe fits, you can wear it too. And he started telling me, he said, for 2.5 years, he said, I didn't work any steps, not as far as applying them. He said, this is how I treated my family. And it was like the man was living in my home. It was like he was living in my home. He said he had a bad day, and he'd say part of his alcoholism, and unfortunately it's part of mine too. If I have a bad day, if you're close to me, you're supposed to have a bad day. But you don't tell her. So you just walk in and glare at her like you ruined another day on me. Figure out what you did this time. You know, he'd say to me, he'd do things in Alcoholics Anonymous that I never even thought about. He'd say he'd be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, look at somebody that he never met before, never said hello to before, and say, I don't like that guy. I think, well, I do that all the time. He said, "You think normal people do that?" I said, "Well, maybe not." And the guy started to show me what this disease was about as far as the way I thought. And then I asked my sponsor, I said, "Well, Bob, let me ask you something." I said, "How can I get in my life what you have in your life?" Because what this man had is he was sober a long time at that time, but more important than that is he was comfortable. He had a message, and he knew he had a message. And he hoped I'd get that message, but if I wasn't going to get it, he was just going to go on to the next guy. You know, he wasn't trying to one-upsman me or anything like that. He was just trying to carry a message he believed was God's message in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, "How can I get in my life what you have in your life?" And he told me something I don't want to forget. He said, "Ron, if you want what I have, you have to do what I do." He said, "It doesn't come through osmosis. It's not going to come through having me as a sponsor. It doesn't rub off. It doesn't come through reading a book." He picked up the big book. He said, "I could eat this thing. It wouldn't treat my alcoholism." He said, "It doesn't come through meetings. Meetings don't treat alcoholism." He said, "If you want what I have, you do what I do." And I said, "What do you do, Bob?" And he said, "What I do is I take these 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and I learn to apply them in my daily life. It's not steps I did yesterday. It's an application today, this day, as an alcoholic." And when he said that, and this is why I needed a sponsor so badly, when he said that, my ego came right to the forefront. And I looked at him and I said, "Bob," I said, "I've already done the steps. I did them when I was sober about a year." I said, "And I go to step meetings. I know all there is to know about the steps." And Bob didn't argue. He just got the big book out, opened it up to the page that has the steps listed on them. In the first step, there's a dash between the word alcohol and that. And he put his finger down on this dash. And he said, "Ron, since you know so much about these 12 steps, what's this dash for?" And I looked at him, I said, "I don't know." In fact, I went home and looked at my big book because I figured maybe he put it there just to confuse me. You know. But what my sponsor did is he took me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. He took me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We started at step one. He didn't say you're sober 4 years, so we'll start at four. You know, he started at step one. He took me through the 12 steps. And because of that, I found a way to live that's better than anything I ever imagined. Anything I ever imagined. You know, my wife and I have a good relationship today. I know, I'm watching the clock. You don't have to stand up and do that. you know, but I found something here in Alcoholics Anonymous that's better than anything I ever imagined. Anything I ever imagined. I think... That was pretty cool, wasn't it? Boy, if you could just lose weight that easily. you know, all I can tell you, if you're new here tonight, if you're new in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, don't wait. Don't wait. Get into these steps. Do them to the best of your ability. Do them to the best of your ability. You're going to find a way to live that's better than anything you could ever imagine. Anything you could ever imagine. I think the greatest message in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we learn to live reasonably comfortably with unsolved problems. With unsolved problems. I'm going to close real quick with one of my favorite AA stories, and then I'm going to sit down, and I'll probably have a minute extra. And what that is, it's a story, and I think it's really the story of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a story of a lady that's walking along one day, and she falls into a hole. Deep hole, and she can't get out. She's trying to get out of this hole, and she can't do it. And she starts screaming, "Help, help, help, I'm down in this hole, and I can't get out." And this physician walks past the hole, and he looks down, and he sees her. And she says, "Mister, I'm in this hole. I can't get out. Can you help me?" And he said, "Sure." And he takes out a prescription pad, and he writes out a prescription, and he drops it in the hole, and he walks away. And she looks, and she says, "Now, that doesn't help at all." And she starts screaming again, "Help, help, help, I'm in this hole, and I can't get out." And a few minutes later, a man of the cloth walks past. And he looks down and he says, "What's going on?" She said, "I fell in this hole. I can't get out. Can you help me?" And he says, "Sure." And he writes out a prayer and he drops it down in the hole and he walks away. And she says, "That's not going to help me." And she starts screaming again, "Help, help, help. I'm down in this hole and I can't get out." And a member of Alcoholics Anonymous walks past the hole. And he looks down in that hole and he says, "What's going on?" And she says, "I'm in this hole and I can't get out." And he says, "Move over." And he jumps down. He jumps down in the hole right next to her. And she looks at him and she says, "What are you, nuts?" She says, "Now we're both down in this hole." And he looks at her and he says, "Yeah, but I've been here before and I know the way out." So if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, grab onto our hands and hold on because we know the way out. Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com. Thank you.